This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. I want to welcome everyone into this episode of Fairways and Greens. This week I have a fellow PGA professional who is recognized among his peers as one and has an outstanding accomplishment in teaching the game of golf. He's really known for his teaching abilities for all ages and abilities. He's very active in the Yuma, Arizona area with junior golf, veterans, and disabled adaptive golf. Mark's had a learning center there. He's been teaching for quite a few years. He's located at the Las Barrancas Golf Complex in Yuma. He also hosts the Desert Southwest Golf Show, which is a weekly live radio program that airs in Yuma on 560 KLBU Talk Radio. Mark, welcome to the show today.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
So we've had a little wet weather lately, kind of puts a damper on teaching. I'm fortunate enough to have an indoor facility. Mark, I'm fascinated by what you have going on in Yuma. I would have to call you the king or prince of Yuma golf. The programs and the people you've assembled out there, Kathy Gildersleeve, it's just an amazing thing going on. Why don't you start out by just kind of sharing what you have going on in Yuma today?
Well, we've been very active in the Yuma community. I have been very active in the community for the last 18 years with junior golf and women's golf. And this last year, I got involved with PGA Hope with David Windsor. And we helped set up a program in Tucson. We're working on setting up a program in Phoenix right now. And, of course, we started our own program here in the Yuma area. We also have a very active in-schools program where we actually go into the school, work with the physical education teacher, actually teach the classes, teach the physical education teacher how to teach the classes in introducing the game of golf to kids. So there's a lot of things going on. We're doing a lot of different things right now. And as you said earlier, of course, I manage three golf courses here in the Yuma foothills at the Gila Mountains. And so, yeah, I stay busy. I stay very busy.
Yeah, I can imagine. We've off and on, we share some golf groups and kind of have similar philosophies. I would call us more of old school type instructors. I'm really fascinated by your kids' programs. We here in Southern Nevada have kind of let things kind of fall by the wayside with junior golf. And obviously, I think you and I both believe that getting juniors back into the game of golf is the future of golf in many, many ways. And your program you're running at Desert Mesa Elementary School is something I think could be modeled all over the country, and I know U.S. Kids has got programs has gotten kind of interested. Why don't you kind of go into what you're doing with the kids and how you introduce them to golf? I think it's both of our passions.
Well, I think we have a whole new generation now of children that view information in a very, very different light. I'm not going to say that they want instant gratification. I'm going to say, though, that they want some instant understanding and some kind of instant acceptance. So whatever you're going to introduce has to be fun, and there has to be a reason that they want to go forward and discover more. And so that's what we've done in our in-schools program here in Yuma. We have a program where we introduce the game of golf, but how we introduce it is a lot of fun. It's and the kids absolutely love it. We work with the kids for 2 weeks before we even give them a golf club to swing. And by the time they're ready to swing a golf club, they've associated that golf is fun. Golf is a sport that I can show interest in, discovery in. And the second I put that golf club in their hands and they swing the club, they're hooked. I mean, they absolutely love the game. The program that we teach is 6 weeks long, and I think that that's what's important, though, is that we've got to make golf fun, we've got to make it interesting, and we've got to make it fun and interesting now. It has to be fun and interesting from the get-go, otherwise we lose them.
Right. My experience has been way back, 20 years ago, getting them on the golf course was my priority, as fast as possible. And we used programs mm-hmm. where, to get them out on a driving range, hitting golf balls, and, the first tee programs have come in, the snag programs. There's all sorts of ways to introduce the kids to the game, but to keep them in the game, and I think you learn golf playing golf. And I'm really kind of excited about the Air Flyer program you're using. I think it introduces the swing motion and gets them excited. It's fun. And how fast do you move the kids from in your programs from this 6 week program on? I mean, you have an awesome opportunity because you've got the par three course and the executive course at your facility. We utilize a couple of the executive courses here in town for our juniors, and we try to get them out there and get them on the golf course and just teach them how to play the game. How do you get them from the school to the golf course?
We have a junior program that we hold every Saturday. It's a year-round program. But we work with the schools, and we actually arrange transportation from the school to the golf course, kind of like a field day.
That's awesome.
For the kids. And right now our schools in Yuma don't have budgets for a lot of field trips. So to put a bus together with about 50 kids on a bus costs $100. And through our Yuma Junior Golf Foundation, which is a private nonprofit organization, we raise money. And part of that money goes to paying for the bus. So it's $100 to take a bus from a school. The bus sits there, drops the kids off, waits for the kids. We have the kids anywhere from an hour and a half to 2 hours to get back on the bus, and they're taken back to school. Like I said, the cost of that is $100. And the Yuma Junior Golf Foundation pays for that transportation. So the whole program is around, look, if you like it, then we'll explain to you costs and things like that are associated with golf. But the first thing is we got to get you to like it. So in our 6 week program, the final week is the field trip. The final week is we get to go to the golf course. We've learned how to swing the club. We've learned how to do all the things that we need to learn how to do, and now we take the kids to the golf course.
So in the process of this 6 week program, is it done every day in school as a class?
I'm sorry?
Is it done every day in school as a class during the 6 week program?
No, it's done once a week.
Just once a week for 6 weeks?
Correct.
Yeah, and I've seen the program on Facebook. I've seen you and Kathy out there with the Air Flyers, teaching them the motion. And then the final week, you get them to the golf course. And that's where they get. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but in the third week, we actually give them the golf club. And we take them from the air flyer to snag golf. So there's actually three developments that are going on during this program. We go from air flyer to snag golf to actual golf clubs, golf balls, golf course.
Cool. And that last week is when they get to the golf course.
Correct.
So you're able to utilize the playgrounds for part of the instruction during the school program.
Yes.
That's great. I think this is something that could be modeled and put in place all over the country. I know that U.S. Kids has kind of approached you guys. How long have you been conducting this program now?
2 years.
Wow. And
retention has really improved. That's one of the things that I'm so concerned about is retention. You know, we go out, we do all this work, we put in all this time, we put in the hours, and then we don't see the kids come to the golf course. So we've got to retain these kids. And before we do anything, I go back to what I was talking about in the original conversation. We've got to create fun.
Yeah, I agree.
We've got to create excitement.
I agree. And there's so many other sports that are competing with golf now, and soccer programs and baseball for the kids. But I think golf is something that any kid can play and enjoy and have fun. And one of the things I've seen that's been difficult is doing the PGA leagues and things is that there'll be groups of them that are really, really good, and these kids that are coming out of the more public facilities are getting frustrated because they don't have the same skill level as some of the, you know, higher end private golf team leagues. And so we've always been looking at ways to get kids out and having fun. And there's so many great programs, but I think in many ways we miss so many kids because we can't keep them and retain them, which is exactly what you were talking about. I totally agree. I'm fascinated by the fact that you bus these kids from the schools out to the golf course and introduce them. Once this program's over, is it up to the parents and to keep the kids involved, or what's your follow up? Do you allow them to get? Do you have another level in the schools, or once that program's over, it's just new kids that come into the program? How do you continue to move them forward?
Child excited, because when the child's excited, he's going to go home and tell his mom and dad he's excited, and mom and dad are going to pay attention to that. Mom and dad are going to listen to, you know, he or she has found something new and they're excited about it and they want to do it. And once we have the child excited and they're committed to doing it, it's pretty easy to get the parents to follow along.
Great. Well, then, okay, so now you've got the kids excited. So now I'm sure you have your individual junior programs where you can get these kids and retain them. Once the kids are coming back, one of the things that we used to do here in Las Vegas, which we're trying to reestablish, was we had what we called the Itty Bitty League, which was for the 10 and under kids, that they could come out and play three holes and compete and have fun. And, you know, I think that the competition aspect of it was important to introduce at some level as well. How do you guys, and I know you have, obviously the Yuma Junior Golf Association has got to be somewhat behind this. So once you get the kids out and you get them playing, what's the next step for them?
Competition.
Yep.
Exactly what you said. We have a great program here that's about 20 years old. I've been the chapter president of that group for the last 16 years. It's called the Antigua Tour, the PGA Antigua Tour. And then, of course, just last year we started PGA Junior League, and I've gotten three other golf courses this year involved. So we'll have three golf courses involved. It looks like I'm going to have two teams, maybe three. We've got one other golf course that's going to have at least two. And then one of the new courses coming in and joining us this year is going to have one. So we're going to have six teams. And the idea is to play each team at least twice in a nine-hole scramble team event. And that gives us 12 events to play.
I love the scramble format.
Yes, so do I. So we've got 18 events coming up in June, July, and early August that all revolve around golf. So if you think about that, what I just said, June, July, and part of August is only 10 weeks. But in that 10-week period of time, we have 18 events.
That's great.
And then the hook is set. I mean, then we have commitment. Then we have retention. Then we have results. Yeah. And as that group begins to grow, as any group grows, other people start to see it. They start paying attention to it. And they're like, what's going on over there? I want to go over and find out what those guys are doing. I want to go over and find out what that's all about. So it's very grassroots, but it's working.
Well, I think you have to be grassroots now to get them started, and to get your ability to get into the school system is something that we're working on here in Las Vegas through the Safe Key programs, after school programs, and just introducing the same similar deal. And Mark, I know you and I are going to have some discussions about this, and I'd like to model some of the things that we're going to do in the Safe Key program. Particularly with the air flyer, and again, it's just to get the kids exposed. You know, it's part of their Safe Key program, so that the parents aren't paying anything extra, and we get a chance to expose golf to these kids. And then we have our Saturday programs where we have four or five locations where the kids can come out and actually for an hour and a half, they can purchase a six package deal for nothing through our association, and they can come out and learn to play golf. And, you know, I'm a big Mike Hebron fan, as I know you know Mike pretty well. And what we do is basically, I just believe you play to learn, and the quicker we get them out there playing and having fun and doing little scramble formats, which we love here, just gets the kids going and helps grow the game. I was very, very disappointed in what I saw happen in the late 90s. And the shift at the PGA and the boom of golf, and everything was booming, and they were riding the push of the baby boomers. And, you know, I sat at many meetings before I retired from the PGA and discussed the fact that we're not getting new people into the game. We're not bringing the kids in. And as a result, 10 years later, you know, the numbers are down. And I think other sports have kind of taken over, and I've watched the growth of soccer grow from the ground roots level, and I think, you know, the ability to grow golf like you're doing in Yuma is a true testament to you know, if you get committed people and you get it organized, it can be a tremendous, tremendous way to bring new people into the game. I'd like to, you know, let my audience know that I think Mark and Kathy and his team out there are doing a wonderful job. And I know that U.S. Kids is looking at what they're doing. I'm looking at what they're doing to help grow the game here. We had 2,200 members in our junior golf program here when I was on the board, and I stepped down in 1994. And I stepped away to go pursue golf schools and other things in my career. And over the next 20 years, basically, the association was dissolved. The First Tee came in and ran their programs, I was asked to come in a year ago and take a look at what was going on. And there's only 400 members in our junior golf program here in the valley of you know, Las Vegas has gone from 1995. It's the population's tripled, the school system's tripled, and yet we're down to 400 members in junior golf from 2,200 members 20 years ago. So something wasn't working. And it was just very disappointing for me to see that. So I've been out kind of consulting a little bit and working on some ideas and some different programs we're going to try to put in place this year to help regrow it. The Southern Nevada Golf Association has now reestablished its junior golf program. It's underfunded. It's just starting. So we're looking at ways. And I think, Mark, your program is a great example of some of the things that we can do here. Mm-hmm. So just to shift gears a little bit, Mark, you've got your radio program, which live radio, which I did a little bit. It's again, for those of you listening, I believe every Tuesday, Mark does a live show on KLBU in Yuma, Arizona. But I know you also record and post these podcasts up for people to come listen. And I've listened to a few of them. Mark gets some great guests on his show, and I would encourage you. Mark, tell people how they can find you, first of all, and track down your podcasts and all your programs.
Oh, it's really simple. You can go to my website. There's a at Mark at markcroftgolf.com. There's a link there. But the easiest thing to do is just go to kblu.am.com. And up in the right-hand corner, you'll see a drop box that says podcast. Click on that. That drop box opens up. And there is the Desert Southwest Golf Show. Just click on that. And we keep a year's inventory of podcasts. So on Monday, you can see anything from February 20th all the way back or forward to the interview that we'll do this Tuesday. And this Tuesday we have on Nancy Lopez. And I'm really, really excited about that. Nancy and I have been talking back and forth for the last 6 months and trying to find a time when she can come on and join us. And we finally have a date that we collaborated on, and she's going to be with us. And we did the pre-interview yesterday, as a matter of fact, and it's going to be a phenomenal show. It really is. Really take a look inside women's golf and how women survive out on the tour. It's really going to be a great interview. I don't want to give too much of it away, but you know, Nancy had two kids while she was playing on the tour. She was married to a famous baseball player, Ray Knight, when she was on the... I mean, there were a lot of dynamics going on in this woman's life, and she found a way to keep it all together and be a winner. Now, I mean, in my brain, Nancy Lopez is the Tiger Woods of the LPGA. I mean, she is what lit the fire. She's what brought C. Ray Pack. And she brought South Korea. She's what brought Kari Webb. She brought Australia. I mean,
no, I have to agree. I mean, not
Nancy Lopez was a linchpin. She really was.
If she wasn't Tiger Woods, she was a combination of Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus for that tour. And just coming out at such a young age and just blowing everybody away. And then, of course, now we've seen that happen multiple times since then. And I think the age factor on the LPGA Tour is fascinating to me. These women, obviously, and I've noticed this with junior golf, as I'm sure you have, that the kids, when I'm working with kids, the little girls can concentrate at a younger age and focus better at a younger age than the little boys. You know, a lot of times the boys, after 10 minutes, they're off chasing butterflies, and you got to kind of corral them back into the lesson tee. But with girls, they just the concentration level is just phenomenally higher at a younger age, and I think that's why you see these so many young stars out on the LPGA Tour, and of course the fact that they're women and they may want to go on and have families, for them to get out and perform early it's just amazing to me. And of course you see on the men's side you do see the younger stars, but not at the ages that you see the women. And I just think it's fascinating. I love watching the LPGA Tour. I can't wait to listen to the show, Mark. Honestly, I'm a big fan of Nancy's. Congratulations for getting her on the show. I got to tell you, Mark's had some incredible guests on his shows. Tell us some of the other people that you've had on lately so the guests, if they have interest, they can track down these podcasts and listen.
We had Carol Mann on last week. Carol's a very, very good friend of mine because both of our close relationships with Manuel Della Torre. Carol and I have known each other for a long time. I've had on Jim Hardy in the past. Great teacher, renowned teacher. Michael Hebron's been on with us. Michael's writing a brand new book right now.
Yeah, he is.
As soon as that book is out, he'll join us again. One of my favorites, Carl Jackson. And for a lot of you who don't know who Carl Jackson is, Carl Jackson was a lifetime caddy at Augusta. And he carried in 42 consecutive Masters tournaments. He was on Ben Crenshaw's bag when he won both of his Masters. He carried for Snead, carried for Hogan, carried for Palmer. And he's just an incredible, incredible human being. And every year, the week before the Masters, we have Carl on the show, and we do a recap of Augusta, and we talk about different things, what happens in the past. We've had on artists, we've had on authors, anything to do with golf that you don't normally find in the media. We don't talk about the tours very often. We don't talk about stats. We don't. Most of the show is all editorial and opinion, and what the guests talk about.
Right.
So, it's a great show. It's very entertaining. It's a lot of fun, and it's a fast hour. It goes by very quickly.
Yeah, this is what my podcast is all about. It's not. You can go to hundreds of sites and get all the current information and get the latest on what's happening on the tour. But really, my guests are the same way. I bring people on just to talk about just different facets of the golf industry. How's Carl doing, by the way? He was fighting cancer, and I really didn't hear much about him last year. You know, the year Crenshaw did his final round there, Carl was supposed to carry the bag and was too weak to do it. But he shared information with Jordan and some of the other greats. I mean, he's a legend, literally.
Oh, yeah. The year that Jordan won, all his Jordan's caddy kept saying to him over and over again, this is Carl's Reed, this is Carl's Reed,
exactly.
This is Carl's Reed. Every time they were on the green, Carl said, Carl said, Carl said.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It is.
He has got some fascinating stories of, Masters past 42 years. I mean, 42 years, that's a history book all by itself. And Carl just came out with a brand new book.
Really?
Which, yes, and through a caddy's eyes. And he and I talked about that the day before yesterday, and he sent me a copy, and I can't wait to get it. But, he's just a fascinating guy. We're hoping to have Crenshaw on with him this year. We've had problems booking Ben in the past because when he's traveling and doing different things, he won't do any kind of interviews or anything else other than what's live at the event that he is. So
yeah,
we've had some problems, trying to get him. But no, Carl's a wonderful guest. And one of my favorites is Reese Jones.
Yeah.
Reese is a great, great interview. And he has so many insights into golf course design and why golf courses are built the way they are. He understands the game. He's going to join us in 2 weeks, and we're going to be talking about some course development that he's doing right now with Tee It Forward, where he's actually working with golf courses in building tees forward to make golf courses more playable and more enjoyable. In fact, you and I were talking earlier that we're doing the same renovations this summer at our 18-hole golf course. Our 18-hole golf course is a championship golf course. It's cut through rock and the desert, and it's very, very challenging. And we want to make that experience more enjoyable. The golf course sets in a beautiful setting here in Yuma. It sets right up against the base of the Gila Mountains. And we want to bring more playability to our golf course and more enjoyment. So we're doing very much the same thing. But Reese will be on in 2 weeks talking to us about some of the projects that he's doing to make golf courses more playable and more enjoyable.
That's such an important point. And I know we've talked about it, and I see it all the time with my students. And I actually do some moonlighting with a booking agency here in town. We book tee times for out-of-town guests. And some good friends of mine who I used to work with in junior golf, you know, the millennials came along and created this golf booking company. And what we find is everybody wants to play all these high-end golf courses, which is great. But, you know, my experience is unless you're a 10 or 12 handicapper, most of these golf courses are going to be a little bit overwhelming. I mean, they were all built at the time when the game was booming, and they're, you know, desert style, and you miss the fairway, you're in the rock. I find that most people, this whole, agenda of moving forward that the PGA is trying to get, and the point behind it is the game's more enjoyable, you play faster, and you score better. I mean, when I take my beginners out, I take them to depending on how old they are, from 100 yards or maybe up to 175 yards. And when they start shooting par from there, then we move back a little bit. When they can start making, you know, get on the green in regulation from 200 yards or 100 yards, and then we move them back. And, you know, the key behind that is being able to access a golf course that will allow you to do it. And it's very difficult for people that are learning the game that don't have access like that to really get enjoyment out of it. And when you put them back there at 380 or 400 yards and, you know, they hit it 120 yards or 150 yards, you know, it's just not that much fun.
I'm a big advocate of that. You're a senior player, and, you know, and especially for our ladies, okay? And they're hitting, you know, fairway medals for their second shot into par fours. I mean, come on. That's not fun. I mean, they want to get 7, 8, 9 irons, pitching wedges, whatever. They want to play the game of golf and they want to enjoy it. And you're right. I mean, that's life, right? As we're younger, we can expand and grow. And as we get older, we shrink and go backward, you know? So when we're finished with our revisions this summer, we'll have 7 sets of tees.
Perfect.
All those tees will be maintained, taken care of, but we'll have a golf course for everybody, and I think that's very important.
I agree. You know, I'm at the Las Vegas Country Club now, and it's a championship golf course. They've had 20 tour events and 7 LPGA events, and there's so much room to add tees. So when I take my beginning ladies out, I move them down inside 200 yards and they have a blast. And if they were on the ladies tees, the ladies tees play almost 5,600 yards, which is about where most seniors should be playing from. And you know, you had a 7,400 yard golf course with basically 4 sets of tees. But even the senior tees are like 5,800 to 6,100 yards. And for me,
that's
ideal for me. I mean, I can still hit it 250, but man, I like having wedges into the greens, and I move back even to the second set of tees, and I'm hitting long irons into these 425 yard par fours, and it's just not that much fun anymore. I'm 63.
Exactly.
I just think that the golf courses have overpowered most people. It's nice, you know, you get all these big name architects coming. It's great to hear Rees and these architects beginning to change. And I love Crenshaw golf courses. I mean, I played the Barton Creek facilities many, many times, and Ben makes it playable, and it's wide open, and there's lots of tees, and the greens are big, and you know, those things make it a lot of fun. I remember when we were growing up, we had these little push-up greens everywhere, that a lot of flat golf courses in South Texas, and they just kind of mound the greens up, and they were really small, but the golf course was playable. It wasn't too long, and that's what made it fun. And I really hope that you see more. I mean, this thing about playing nine, yeah, that's kind of a great idea. But if you just make golf courses more user friendly, the game would speed up in its own mind. And I'm excited about the USGA changing some rules. Hopefully, they'll get it right and make the game move quicker and make it more fun. I think the industry's finally beginning to realize that we need to have an overhaul if we're going to continue to grow this game. And the fact...
No, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. You know, we kind of have a petri dish at our facilities because we have three of them. And where we've seen growth in our golf facilities is at our par three and our executive course. Well, what does that tell you?
That tells you exactly what we've been talking about.
Exactly. People want to go out. They want to play fun. They want to be in groups. They want to do all those things that we as business people want to see happen. But we've got to give them a golf course where they can do that. And, yes, we have the low handicappers and the guys that want to see the challenges and our golf course stretches out to 7,100 yards, and we have a lot of terrain on our golf course, a lot of variation in terrain. So at 7,100 yards, our golf course is a lot to handle. I think our course record is 68, and that's held by an amateur here in Yuma that's played in three USGA amateur championships, not qualifiers, amateur championships.
Great.
Two public links and USGA amateur. So the kid can play, right?
Right.
And we don't have a 61 or a 62 or a 63 hanging in the clubhouse. I mean, it's a hard golf course from the tips. It really is for the average player. And so it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense.
No, I agree.
We need to make the course, like I said, more playable and more enjoyable.
Yeah, we had the same experience. We began to, back when I was in Sacramento, I was up managing three golf courses. And when we took our public facility, our true public facility, and we toned down the rough and we opened up the fairways a little bit, and we added a new set of tees, we basically tripled our volume of play. It was more playable. It was a lot of fun. And we brought the city of Davis in, and got the seniors out there through the senior citizens group, and we got the juniors out through the schools, and we really saw the game grow, and we got people playing the game, and we built our business up. I think in many cases the golf industry and a lot of these management-run golf courses, they've taken the golf pro and the game kind of out of the equation. And if there is an actual PGA member there, he's usually in the office trying to figure out how to cut costs, managing budgets, checking his food and beverage, his water bill. And what we did is we put golf professionals, assistants, and apprentices in every position in food and beverage, outside on the podiums, in the golf shop, so that everywhere you went, there was a guy who had a passion for golf talking to you, asking you how you were doing. If you were on the range struggling, you know, I'd wander out. We built a putting green right outside the pro shop, so people would hang out there next to the patio and the bar and the food and beverage area. And we just made it kind of a networking residential center for people to come. And parents could leave their kids there and know they were safe because they were being monitored and watched by our staff. I think over the last 15, 20 years, all these golf courses, the Tiger boom, the boom, baby boomers were driving the business, and we're all kind of dying off now. And the golf course has got real impersonal. And
that's really a good point.
Yeah, and they got very impersonal. And, you know, I grew up in South Texas in a small – we had an 18-hole muni and a 9-hole private facility there. And I used to go out and hang out and putt for dimes with all the old guys, you know, and they teach you things and mentor you into golf. And you know, I remember one of my best lessons ever was this old Navy guy had a little bar and grill, and he had a putting green out. He was right next to the municipal golf course. And after the course closed, we'd always go over there. He had lights up, and we'd putt. And one day he said, "Son, you got to learn to roll the rock. It, you can't just hit at it. You got to learn to roll the rock." And every time I'm struggling with my putting, I hear his words, "Just roll it, just roll it." And things like that, you know, stay with you for life. And to build a community around a golf course was how it was when I grew up. And it's what got me into golf. It's what the passion was. It was about relationships and building relationships and helping people out. And you just saw, sadly, you know, in the late 90s, there was a big shift in the industry. And it just, you know, and I even worked for a management company for a while. You know, the fact that I was able to later in my career work for an individual who had a vision of that and enabled us to buy 3 bankrupt golf courses and turn them back into those kind of communities was just fascinating to me. And I just hope that that this trend continues. And I think bringing this new generation in and changing the rules and making the golf courses easier, it's just sad to see all the golf courses closing up. We've lost several here in town. Badlands and Silverstone have all closed up within the last year. And it's sad to see because they were both built around communities and the communities couldn't support them. I like what you're doing out in Yuma. I think that needs to be the kind of the future of where we're going with golf. And I think golf instruction has gotten too difficult and too technical.
I agree with that. I think that you brought up a really good point. The golf course used to be like more of a community center than a golf course. It was multifaceted, multi-purpose, when management companies came in, they were green fee. I mean, it was just ring the register. I think the management comes to a scourge of the industry. I really do.
No argument.
The kids that we were teaching in the 90s are now the parents of the kids that we're introducing to golf in 2017.
I agree.
And the mistakes that we made in the 90s are haunting us right now.
They are. Good point.
Dottie Pepper was on the show. Gosh, it was close to Valentine's Day a year ago. And she said something to me that I'll never forget. She said, "We missed an entire generation."
Yeah, we did.
She said, "We just blew off an entire generation." Well, that generation that we blew off are now the parents of the children that we're teaching today.
Yep. And they're the ones that are putting their kids in soccer and everything else but golf.
Exactly. So that's our challenge. I mean, that's what we've got to see and what we've got to begin to overcome. And we will. We will.
No, I agree. Programs like you're doing. And I mean, there's some great programs around the country. Hawaii's got great programs. There's some good things going on in Southern California and Northern Cal.
There's phenomenal programs going around on the United States right now. And the thing that I like to see about a lot of those programs is they're affordable.
Yep, that's the key. Yeah,
that's important.
You know, I don't have access to the public at the country club, so I have limited access to juniors, so I have to do most of my junior work elsewhere, and I have a good friend of mine at Aliante, which we've done some work there. But, you know, it's the other thing that I'm very, very big supporter of is adaptive golf and disabled golf. And, you know, our friend Rich O'Brien is probably, in my mind, the flagship behind it all. I mean, he's such an advocate of it, and his new book just came out, which I highly recommend. And Rich is going to come back on the show again and talk about his book and his story that he and of his journey with he and Fred. But I know you're involved in veterans. Tell us a little bit about what you got going on down in Yuma with adaptive golf and veterans.
Well, you know, I here in Yuma, most of our veterans are Vietnam era.
Right.
Got a lot of guys with PTSD. But one of the things that stirred me and pointed me towards teaching people with challenges, illnesses, and was the fact that veterans have the highest suicide rate in the world. I'm sorry, in the United States.
Yes.
I mean, that, and I started thinking about that, and it was like, wow, people that kill themselves do it because they're depressed, they're not happy, they're not, you know, golf is so happy. You know, I want to introduce golf to veterans. And I got involved with David Windsor at the American Adaptive Golf Association. And then I met Rich. Rich has been on the show a couple of times, and Rich and I talk all the time. And I said, yeah, this is something we need to do. This is, if I have something that I should give as a golf professional, I should give this. I mean, I owe this to these people. Everything that I have, I owe to these people. And I need to give back. And that was my whole thing, was that I feel an indebtedness to veterans. I was a Vietnam kid myself. I didn't serve in the Army. I didn't have to go to the Vietnam War. There's a long reason behind that. But, you know, at my age, I was part of the draft. I was part of all those things. And I know a lot of people. I have vets that work for me. So we got involved with the Veterans Association here in Yuma. We got involved with the VA. We got involved with some of the American Legion associations. And we say, guys, this is what we want to do. And they were behind us. They support us. They, you know, fantastic. And so we started a program. And I went. I got certified. I did all the things that I had to do. Kathy went along with me. And in the meantime, we have kind of started the charge for Arizona. You know, we've helped create programs in Phoenix. We've helped start and create programs in Tucson, and now we're doing our own program here, and it's so rewarding. I mean, in our program here, we've got a gentleman with hand injury because of a grenade. We've got three PTSD guys. We've got some guys with bad knees, bad hips because of their service in the military. And it's all adaptive. And we meet every Wednesday for about an hour and a half. And we teach golf, but more than teach golf, we just sit around and talk. And we've created a kind of a village where
community,
a place where they know they can come every Wednesday and be with friends and talk and have people listen to them and share experiences, and I can't even explain it. It's incredible. I mean, it's so rewarding. It's unbelievable. How could I not do this?
No, I agree. And I just think you see more and more of these programs popping up. And, you know, I grew up the same era you did, Mark, and I was I got out of high school in 72, and my draft number was pretty high, and I wanted to go enlist, and they weren't really expanding the services at that time. They were pulling out, trying to downsize. And so my dad said, why don't you just go off to college and get a degree in business and come back to work for us. So I made that choice. I've always been, I was ready to go. I mean, I grew up with that kind of mentality in South Texas, and we were patriots, and my dad was in the Air Force and flew B-24s. And so, you know, to be able to get back, and we have a program here at Aliante on Tuesdays, and the veterans hospital's right out there. And I really agree with you when you say it's almost like a small community where we just get together, and it gives these guys and gals a place to come. And we get a lot of, and there's so many other, you know, first responders and people like that that are suffering from these same kind of conditions. And to open it up, and it is very, very rewarding. And it's something that I hope to put more and more time into, that and junior golf and growing the game. Those are the things that we can give back. You know, we get to this point in our lives, Mark, and I think you'll agree with this, is that we have done and benefited so much from this industry, and it's given so much to us over the years that, you know, my goal was hopefully to mentor some of the younger professionals that wanted to teach and give back. And you just, you know, you don't see a lot of that going on. And, you know, I went out and had an opportunity to get around some incredible people in the early days, and Michael Hebron and George Knutson and Randy Henry, and just some incredible group, Pia and Chuck Hogan, and just some amazing individuals over the years. And they shared their knowledge with us, and we gained it. And, you know, I look back now at my life and I go, you know, it's time to give back. I mean, we have all this knowledge and information to share with people and this passion to do so. And it's just finding the avenues to do it. And I think junior golf and adaptive golf and veterans associations are a place where we can really make a difference. And I'm excited that you're so involved in that, and I know you have a passion for it. It's just, I don't know, it's just, I guess, you know, you only get through life once, and it's just, what did you, you know, I always wonder, you know, what can I do now to give back on all the years? And we do it with our kids, and we do it with our grandkids, but to be able to share it with other people, I think this industry has always been about relationships with me. Even playing golf now, it's all about the guys I'm playing with and the relationships and the camaraderie that we develop over the years. I mean, I play in the same group in this town for over 30 years. And you know, it's just, I think what makes golf special is that it does, you do spend 4.5 hours out there with a group of people. And it's a game you can never master, and it's a game that you can play until you die now, because there is the ability to play disabled. And I just, you know, I know there's a bunch of us on the same page, and I want to kind of thank you for coming in today, Mark. I know you're very, very busy. You've got so many things going on. I can't wait to listen to Nancy's show this week. Just want to give you a chance to just kind of let people know again how to get a hold of you, and I hope we do some more shows, Mark. I would love to come and see what you're doing down there if I had enough time. If I, you know, it's like you and myself, we've got 4 or 5 things going all the time, so but it's an amazing industry, and I'm proud to be a part of it and to share your conversation today.
Well, thank you very much, Gaylord. I really appreciate that. Thank you for, you know, inviting me onto your show. I really appreciate that. Why not Yuma? Right now, you know, we're in the height of our season. It's $45 for 18 holes in a cart. Where are you going to find that, right?
Yeah, right? I know. I agree. Not too often here in town.
It's a great community. It's a beautiful place. You can't beat the weather, and we're gonna start a brand new Facebook and website called Why Not Yuma, because the world needs to hear about Yuma. Yuma is a cool place. It really is.
Great.
And it's a cool place for golf.
Well, and you can.
It's an awesome place for golf.
Exactly. And I think, you know, Vegas in many ways is the same way. I think Vegas is, because it's such a destination spot, the golf's kind of gotten outrageously priced, unfortunately. But there are still some gems here in town. So, Mark can be reached at markcroftgolf.com. And obviously his podcasts, again, if you want to repeat that, because there's some great shows, and I really want to encourage my listeners that some of the guests he's had on, Michael Hebron and Reese, and I look forward to Carl's episode. And I follow Mark's Facebook site constantly because there's always great information popping up there. Mark, if you would, before we close this out, let people know how to get a hold of find the podcast again, and any other information you'd like to share about your golf schools, locations, because I know there's some listeners out there in the Arizona area that'd be fascinated to come by and see you.
The easiest way to grab the podcast is just go to kbluam.com, and up in the right-hand corner, you will see a drop box that says podcast. Just click on that. You'll get a menu, click on Desert Southwest Golf Show, and that will give you a calendar of the interviews that we've had for the last year. It does not tell you who the interview is, so it just tells you the date. But if you want more information from me, please contact me. I mean, I love to talk to people about golf, and I love to be involved in teaching golf and helping people with their golf swings and helping people, you know, come in and be part of the game. So Markcroft Golf is a great place to go. But, kbluam.com.
Well, Mark, if for all our listeners out there, I want to thank Mark for coming on. Mark, I'd love to know when some of these Carl Jackson shows were performed in the past, and I'll have to hunt them down. But I, again, encourage you. I know he lets everyone know on his Facebook site that, and you can just find Mark Croft on Facebook, and he'll let you know who the guest speakers are coming up. I highly encourage you to listen to the show. Who co-hosts your show with you, Mark? Do you have a co-host on the show?
No, usually I'm by myself, but Kathy Gildersleeve Jensen has been here for the winter, so she's been in for most of the shows on Tuesday. She's a lot of fun, a lot of knowledge. PGA 2014 National Teacher of the Year. Very, very intelligent about the game of golf and the golf swing. She's a lot of fun.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to having her on the show and sharing her insight. She's working with some great training aids and some new products, and amazing. I met her way back in the 90s as a Henry Griffiths fitter, and I'll get her on the show. Mark, I want to thank you again for coming out here on a Sunday and spending some time with me and sharing our conversation. And you have a good one, buddy, and I will talk to you soon and see you on Facebook.
All right, Gaylord. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
Yep.
Well, folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to the golfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.